This is a Collider.com audio interview.
You guys doing?
All right.
Sure.
Yeah, good.
Wow, look at that.
Hey, I just asked Naira about this, because it's a little different, because this is the first movie we actually pressed. And we were like, press day, at least for American people who've been following your work for a while.
Yeah.
So how's it been like, as far as, like, does it feel very different, this movie, making this movie, than the last two? Doing America also, I guess.
Yeah. I kind of feel like we've been hidden away in Santa Fe. We've kind of just blocked ourselves off, and we're just fucking working. Sorry to swear, but
it's always the... I know it's not allowed on the internet.
It's not allowed.
It's always interesting working in America, just because the catering is so different. In England, you get a breakfast, lunch,
and sandwiches.
Sandwiches about four, which are generally slightly dry. Here it's just food all the time. It's really hard not to just eat all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we've been here for like six months nearly, because we did Tintin at the beginning of the year and now this. And I just really love working with American crews. That just seems to be... I think in England there's no overtime. So if you go over, you have to ask nicely, and they don't particularly like it, quite rightly, because they're not being paid to do it. But here there is overtime, so nobody gives a shit about things running over. So everyone's just... I don't know, everyone's just in it to win it the whole time.
Like, you know, we did 10 night shoots back to back, and it was just fucking crippling. But then the crews, even at 5 a.m, would just laugh. You know, it was just... everyone's really... it just enjoyed it, I think. I like to think so, anyway.
It's been really good fun. And I mean, you know, working with our cast as well, who are just extraordinary. And I know it always ends up sounding like a bit of a sort of, you know, love fest when you talk to actors about their fellow actors, because no one really bitches. But I've never worked with a more sort of... we've really felt like we've had to raise our game on this movie, just because everyone's so fucking good. Like Jason and Bill and Joe and Kristen are so, so funny. Sigourney Weaver was absolutely lovely, just so up for it. Blythe Danner is like everyone's mom, which is incredible. And John Carroll Lynch, who's, you know, will forever be Frances McDormand's husband in Fargo for me, it was such a laugh, you know.
And Zodiac.
And Zodiac, of course, yeah, it was Zodiac. But, yeah, it's just like, a couple of times Nick and I have had to sort of go and think, we better fucking start working hard, otherwise we're just going to vanish in this film, you know.
Get lost.
And then Paul on top of that, with Seth doing Paul's voice.
We just forgot that Seth's in it as well.
I know, because he's not on set.
We kind of did him first off. We did mocap in LA like 4 months ago, and we did his bits, and then we came out here. And a few times in the last couple of weeks, I kind of said to Simon, you know, Seth Rogen is in this film as well.
Now, Naira said you came up with the idea during rain while you were shooting Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. One of the biggest ironies of this shoot has been the sheer unpredictability of the New Mexican weather, in that the very sort of motivation for doing this film was like, let's go somewhere hot and make a film about something where something hot is. I know, let's make it in the desert. Yeah, it's an alien. It's Area 51, yeah. And then these guys, and they help him get home. And that was it. And I drew a poster for Naira, Paul giving the finger, and it said, in America, everyone's an alien. And that was the kind of the pitch. And it was sat on Naira's thing. It was sat on Naira's notice board for... it's been sat on there since 2003. And we always joked about doing it. There we are. You know, with this incredible Comic-Con set.
But you have that same feeling that you get sometimes when you go into a pitch meeting with the studio and they say, so what have you got? And we haven't really got anything. And then you have to say, well, how about an alien? And then, yeah, I like that. Oh, and he's got attitude. And it was that. We just kind of
made it trying to run along. This is Minnie. This is not Colin from space. This is Minnie.
Minnie,
is this your daughter?
Yeah, she's going to be in it. She's dressed as Princess Leia tomorrow.
She a Scottish?
She's a miniature schnauzer.
So now that you guys have done Tintin and are obviously huge experts on special effects, does that make it so much easier to be playing opposite nothing and only seems to fall? Or is it tough to be there with that empty space?
It is tough. I mean, the guys, we're working with a Double Negative who we've known for a long time. They did all our Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and have since done, well, there's plenty of things. I mean, Hellboy 2 and Cloverfield. and we've got Spectral Motion who are doing the physical, you know, the puppetry that we do use, and the live lighting reference puppets and animatronics. But it's hard to talk to a red light or a two. I think Mr. Eyeballs is this. There's a pole with two ping pong balls in the top.
We have to shoot Paul so many times. Like, I mean, we did a scene in a night shoot the other day where, because the sun was coming up, I had like 10 minutes to do my single. And then we reshot Paul's stuff the other day, and he had like an hour and a half for his shot.
For an actor who isn't
what?
There.
That's not fucking fair. But like, we've got a little guy in a costume, and we've got a child at points playing Paul.
Christoph, who's our small actor who's playing, who does reference and sometimes suits up, is an amazing drummer.
He
hasn't acted before, but has been tirelessly present on this.
He has been. They call him the Anvil.
Yeah, that's his nickname, the Anvil.
That's very good. But we have to shoot him so many times. You know, we do it with those two guys, then we do it with no one there. Then we do it with Joe Latrillo, and then we do it with a lighting puppet so the camera can see what the lighting does. Then sometimes we do it with a grey ball, then Joe Latrillo, then nothing. So, you know, for each one shot we get, Paul has eight.
Joe Latrillo has been.
We would have been wrapped by now.
We would. He's a little ass. Paul's a complete ass.
Joe's standing for the cause.
What Joe has done, which is in an act of extraordinary selflessness, he's not only playing Agent O'Reilly, but whenever Paul's on set, he does all Paul's off lines and sometimes stands in for him. So, but Joe's been on set all the time, which has been great because he's a fantastic guy. He's such fun. I knew him from Superbad and from Pineapple Express. I'd never seen The State. I'd never seen, but just from that one little thing he does in Superbad, that amazing cameo, he plays that creepy little guy.
You on Facebook?
Yeah, you guys on MySpace?
So this will be your first and last CGI movie.
I don't know. Well, the very motivation for this was we thought how cool it would be to have a film that was essentially a kind of almost like an indie pick, you know, like a road movie, but have at the center of it this incredible. And it has to be incredible. Sprite, you know, this character who is not real, who's a CG character, and how the context of the movie would offset that character to make him look even more real, because it'll be this handheld. And it's, although having said that, Greg's bringing some incredible flourishes to this. There's a lot of motion in the camera. There's a lot of, you know, dramatic movement and stuff. He's really, you know, Spielberging it up, which is great.
I think Paul has. I mean, he has to be incredible. But he also has to be fairly forgettable. Do you know what I mean? If after 10 minutes you're still looking at him thinking, you know, I don't think we've done it right.
Yeah,
he needs just to immediately just become a character and not some kind of amazing CG.
Yeah, you want people to buy him. So, you know, it depends on how it turns out. If it doesn't work, then yes, it is our last.
We've both been scanned, by the way. So if anything happens to either of us, we can still.
And my problem with my problem with Jar Jar Binks was never particularly the technology. It was the idiocy of the character and the
writing. Character,
it was
right,
the character.
Yeah.
It wasn't,
that was everybody's problem.
Yeah, it wasn't the fact that it was a CG character.
And the eye lines.
Yeah, and Ewan McGregor going, ooh, what am I looking at?
Can you talk about working with Greg and not working with Edgar, and how that differs from the
Edgar.
Edgar's been emailing us today.
Yeah, he's been emailing us.
It's different, you know, and I mean, we love Edgar, and we will work together again. We obviously have a third film to make in that particular other series that we were involved in together. Greg is more laid back than Edgar. That's not to say Edgar's in any way kind of hyper. Edgar's an intense director. He's very concentrated. He feels everything. Greg seems to be a little bit more sort of serene on set, but no less kind of involved in the sort of you know, in the artistic process of making the movie. He's I really like Greg. He's a calming influence, isn't he?
He is.
Edgar never speaks to us when we shoot.
No.
When we go into our mode of shooting with Edgar becomes like, he's the director and we're the actors, and he doesn't need to say that much to us anyway, so he'll just come and go, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, okay. And that's it. And Nick, who's known Edgar for 10 years, will come up to me between times and go, does he like me? Does he like me?
Sometimes he says, Edgar. Because he's just so, you know, hung up on thinking about what the camera's doing.
But it's been nice working with a different director and finding a different dynamic, and I think the that will be born out. This is a Greg Mottola film. It's not an
extraordinary movie. Your producer was saying.
Hi, it's Jen. Hey, Jen.
Hi, guys.
Speaking of different
favorite
dynamic,
costumes. Well, yes. Sorry.
You guys are together again, but you're different characters, obviously. How is the dynamic between these two characters different from what we see before?
I think Clive's probably more of a butch this time than the pitch. Danny Butterman and Ed. I think
for a start, this is a two-hander. It's not me and, you know, the central characters of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead were my characters, were Nicholas Angel and Shaun of the Dead, and Nick's characters just stole the show. That's what they did. Whereas this is like, we're both the lead in this film, and Nick's character is probably a little bit more confident, a little bit more assured than mine. Graham is a bit more mousy, less proactive. But, you know, we find our Paul's kind of like Ferris Bueller, you know, he kind of affects everybody around him and never really has affected himself.
I think it's important that we did something slightly different, so I wouldn't, you know, I think, not that we work hard at it, because we've been friends for 15 years, but, you know, the relationship that we have is, I think, quite important to me, and I wouldn't want people to look at it on camera and think, oh, I'm bored, a bit bored of it. It's important, you know, it's important to us.
Now, do your characters have much of a backstory at all, or are they just two fans going to Comic-Con?
I don't think we've got particularly sort of Stanislavskian about their background, but we know.
Oh, I have.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't read the
I didn't read the bio. No. We kind of know where they're from and what they're about. But the important thing in the movie is where we find them and where they are at that time, you know. And so they're two British guys living in sort of like rural North London, or sort of Uxbridge.
Yeah, West London.
West London. And have saved up for this trip. They've come to they're going to start at Comic-Con, and they're going to go to Area 51. And they're going to eventually go down to Roswell. They're going to seal their, you know, they want to go to the UFO hotspots. And by sheer coincidence, they meet an alien.
It could happen.
You know, your producer was talking about how she felt you guys were doing more improv on this movie than you had on the last two. And I was just curious, when you said that Seth had come in and you already recorded a bunch of stuff, you got shot stuff thinking, okay, we need Seth to come back in this scene so that play off what we just did here.
Seth will have to come back, and always was going to, you know, what we did initially in LA was very preliminary, and it was just to get a sense of the performance and what Seth would be doing. But working with people like Kristen and Bill and Jason and Joe as well, they're very good at improvising. So although we're pretty anal about what we write, there has been room to just loosen it up a little bit. And,
you really laugh at anal then.
No, we are. We're pretty Nazi, but we make sure that we get a take of what's written.
Yeah.
But
it just seems, you know, I mean, you can't have someone like Bill and Joe and Jason Bateman. It seems silly having them on set and then not letting them do what they want, really. You know?
Yeah, they also, every one of them brings something into the role, you know, and their turns of phrase. Particularly, we're not American, so the script that we wrote, you know, we had to run it by Greg to make sure that all our terminology was correct, and occasionally just weird little things, not just tiny little turns of phrase. What did Jason bring up the other day? It was something about, I can't remember, but
bulb and globe, was it?
No, it was something else, but just to make sure it seems very natural coming out of the mouths of American actors, and it sounds like it's an American script. We know enough about America to write a pretty damn good stab at that, but the minutiae we wanted to give over to the other actors to say, what would you do?
And your characters they're all knowledgeable and up to date on, you know, American pop culture and what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
The attention to detail, like the t-shirts you're wearing and what's going on, Comic-Con, there, it just blew us all away. Most of us just came from Comic-Con
a few weeks ago.
So I'm wondering what sort of things are hidden in the film that you guys as fans are just really excited to, just, you know, pet things of yours that are in there. That
we've got a great thing at the end. We're not going to say, obviously, but
there is a line in the film that in the right audience, the ceiling of the theatre will fall down.
When we play at Comic-Con in 2020, when we finish all the effects.
We can't give you away. But,
all right.
There's lots of stuff. I mean, that was the presence of our, you know, Sean's and Angel's and Danny's in there was Nancy, entirely our costume designer, who just did that for a laugh. And, you know, I hope anyone who notices that will take it in
in the good fun and not as being self-indulgent. But there's plenty of little things in there that riff on. I mean, the notion of is that Paul has been on Earth for about 60 years living in this base, just basically having an effect on popular culture. He's in touch with a few of the kind of creative minds in America and has helped him out on a few things. And so Paul is responsible for a lot of what we know as being... So he has certain abilities that are, you know, you could trace back that you've seen elsewhere, and the reason you've seen them elsewhere is because it was his idea, which has enabled us to retroactively rip off every film ever. And just say it was Paul's idea.
Because he doesn't get the credit, so is he annoyed that he doesn't get the credit?
He's okay with it. He's okay with it. But there's one particular scene which is we're looking forward to shooting.
We should go back and re-edit the credits of the films that we just to have creative consultant.
Unknown.
Yeah. When we were doing the shots earlier in the theater, I'm just kind of curious, there was that moment where you're to his fans going bananas, somebody on the stage, is, you know, who out there in pop culture would make you guys flip out? Like,
Decided we can give you an exclusive, although don't tell anyone. Because we were trying to think of who it's going to be. We thought it'd be Tweaky.
Really a bit rubbish.
Yeah. So, the guy in the suit, not the guy in the actual suit.
Yeah, just the guy like waving. And you just say.
So Nick, I was curious about the genesis of it. It was one of the things, like 2 years ago, I remember you at the Superbad premiere. It just seems like that everything is kind of spread out from there. And you're working with Greg, and you're working with Michael, and it just seems like all the actors from that movie kind of all. I was wondering, have you guys noticed that? Have you guys felt that at all? That maybe there's some kind of something happened that night, like Manchester was kind of this thing where all these things are kind of generated out of there.
Greg made me drink this potion that night. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I think when you watch something like Superbad, when we watch Superbad, you just think, God, that's fucking great, you know. And they're kind of not they. I mean, Greg and Michael, and they're like an American us, so it just kind of makes sense that we would branch out slightly and want to kind of reach out to Greg and Michael. And
also, we're all
just really good as well.
We're fans of each other's stuff, and it's kind of in our drunkest sort of most sentimental moments on this shoot when we've all been sat together. You know, we said that, you know, we were going to find each other eventually because we like the same stuff and we admire each other. Like, say, some like Bill Hader and, well, you know, like Jason, and having Jeffrey Tambor in it, I'm a massive fan of Arrested Development, so which we were watching last night, and we're going, oh my god, there's Agent Zoil and there's and you know, having picked up bits of SNL on the internet, we don't get it in the UK, crazy, I don't know why, but and seeing Kristen in Knocked Up, and you know, steal that scene in Knocked Up and seeing her in various other films. You see these people and you think, God, they're great. I wish I could work with them. We are so fucking lucky that we're in a position to offer those people parts, and even luckier that they say yes.
Well, they want
to
do it.
So for us, it's a bit of a dream come true. We're getting to work with the people we like. And I think it's just that thing of, like, you know, not to be too much of a hippie, but souls kind of find each other and they gravitate towards each other. Do you know what I mean?
At this point, Peg became a bit of a hippie.
I see a lot of Star Wars stuff out there. Does this mean that George Lucas doesn't have any hard feelings about Tim's reaction?
Wasn't my idea. I said no Star Wars, thanks. I don't know how the fuck. You know, I've got a lot of friends at Lucasfilm because I think they all agree with me, but they just never tell the boss.
And you worked with Spielberg on Tintin. Did you pick his brain at all about? He's done a lot of movies about aliens coming to...
Oh, yeah, he's kind of... Thing. He was very... We'd sit with him between takes and he'd just tell us stories about
close encounters
and stuff. And, you know, his
Peter's a big alien fan, isn't he?
Yeah, Peter's... I think he quite believes in it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Any ideas that kind of substantially maybe influenced...
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, absolutely. And the film very much draws on the tradition of films like Close Encounters and E.T., that kind of sense of wonder and that magical. I mean, we were hoping to have a score, which is, you know, obviously John Williams would be an amazing person to get, but he's expensive. It doesn't work for nothing. But to have that, you know, that Spielbergian feel, definitely, you know, it's you know, and his influence on the film is very evident, more so than you'd be surprised to find out.
A lot of the time we'd run off set really laughing, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Stephen would tell a story about Close Encounters and we'd say, okay, thanks, and he'd go off the set and we'd walk and go like that, we'd shut the door.
curious if you guys are.
For one more question.
I don't know if this is the right.
The most important question.
I don't think this is the right last question, but are you guys in the film at all eating any ice cream, and are you making a point to make it to make sure that you would you say it's a different kind of ice cream?
No, there is no ice cream consumed. There is no. This is not a Cornetto film. This is a different thing.
No, that's what I realized.
Yeah.
It's the Pepsi. This is part one of the Pepsi and Klondike trilogy.
But see, I was wondering for fans of yours and for that ice cream, you know, eating like an ice cream sandwich and being like, I'd go for a Cornetto, but instead, No, it's an ice cream sandwich.
No, it's very like Edgar has insisted that. And quite rightly, that this film never be sold as part of a box set with our other two films.
No.
And I think Edgar's right. This has to be seen as something different. We will be at pains to stress that this isn't the third one in that series of films. This is a different kind of film altogether. I'm not saying that World's End will be a similar film to the other two, but this is mine and Nick's. We've written this together. This is a different director, same production company. But we want it to feel like it's a different thing, and you know, obviously the temptation is to see it as that because it's Nick and I. But there were a couple of little line references in the script which we took out, which were kind of, I think at one point we were taken off in the RV and somebody said punch that shit, and it we realised it was a Hot Fuzz line, and we didn't want anyone to think that we were trying to.
Yeah.
You know, obviously those little references out there are sweet enough because only the people that get those will know what the fuck we're talking about. So, no ice cream allowed. Particularly no Cornettos. You can't get them here!
What are they called?
Drumsticks.
The movie's called Paul. You're on the road. Is there like a Christian theme? Paul on the road to Damascus?
There is I never thought of that, but yes, there is a thread in the movie that about evolution versus faith. And what
probably
Paul
won't go down so well in the middle states.
No, but what Paul represents as Paul's very presence represents a contradiction to certainly creationist values. And Kristen Wiig's character Ruth is a furious Christian and has a whole sort of worldview
rocked
by the appearance of Paul, and so has to question the notion of her faith and divinity in general. So there is a serious little thread going through it, you know, which we've had quite fun with.
Cool.
So we'll talk to you again a bit later, I guess.
Yeah, great.
Cool. I'm going to have to stop my picture taking up this later.